Welcome to the Apple Context Machine, a podcast about all things Apple, with your hosts, Jeff Gabbard and Brian Chaffin.
In 2009, and this is the Apple Context Machine, episode number 160, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, co-publisher, co-founder, and sometime editor of DMO, and with me today is... Ricky Spiro! Yay! Woo!
We're number one! We're number one!
Good to be talking to you again, Brian. Good to be back on the show.
Likewise.
And to get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
And we should explain that Jeff is in Italy shooting a movie, of all things.
Shooting a movie. He's hunting it down. He's got on...
He's on movie safari.
He's got that hat with the ear flaps and the gun. Uh-huh. It's adorable.
And he has an Australian narrator a couple.
That's right. He actually stands right behind him and whispers stuff in his ear.
Jeff is stalking the movie right now. But be that as it may, with Ricky out of the country, I'm sorry, what's his name? His name is Jeff.
I'm Ricky.
I've already forgotten that other guy. What's his name? It's Jeff, right?
Yeah.
Jeff out of the country. Ricky, who founded the show, what was the original name?
Oh, gosh.
It was the Weekly Report. Weekly Roundup.
Weekly Roundup, and then it was the Apple Weekly Report.
Right. And then, in part due to the lack of weekly nature of the way Jeff and I got around to doing it, it's become the Apple Context Machine. But Ricky is still very much a part of the show. It's his baselines that you hear as bumpers. Just so you know.
Like the one you'll be hearing shortly.
Shortly, yes. And speaking of which, we should probably get to it. But first, I should plug the fact that you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/TMOBrian, and you can follow the Mac Observer at twitter.com/MacObserver. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Bumper is a funny word.
Bumper is a funny word. So let's hit the bumper. In this week's episode, SciStar gets a smackdown from Judge Alsup, Swipe comes to Android, but not the iPhone, Apple cleans up at Adweek, and Microsoft's Zune demonstrates its family-friendly approach to Twitter, and of course, Fake Steve asks AT&T's customers to put Ma Bell in a chokehold.
Swipe is coming to Google's open-source mobile phone OS, Android. With Swipe, users don't tap on keys, but rather swipe through the letters of the word they're wanting to type in one continuous motion. The software then interpolates your finger motion to determine what word you're typing. If it's not sure, it presents a list of options. Tests between swipers and iPhone typers have been showing up on the internet, and it shows that swipe is as fast or faster as an input method. It's worth noting that this software essentially replaces the keyboard module in Android. This is possible because of Android's open source design. We should also note that Swipe Inc.'s self-titled technology was developed by T9 predictive text inventor Cliff Kushler and was first unveiled on a Windows mobile device.
You know, I loved him on Cheers.
Loved him.
He was awesome on Cheers. Following his diatribe against American industry and the bean counters that seemingly run most American companies, Fake Steve Jobs called on AT&T's customers to try and bring the company's mobile network to its knees for an hour. The so-called Operation Chokehold encouraged customers to find data-intensive apps to run for 1 hour, beginning at noon p.m. Pacific last Friday. AT&T, needless to say, did not take kindly to the idea, saying in a statement, "We know that the vast majority of customers will see this action for what it is, an irresponsible and pointless scheme to draw attention to a blog." Well, it's Tuesday now, and it would seem that no one really cared.
Yeah. Operation Chokehold sounds so much more badass than what it actually would be, right? A bunch of people poking away at their iPhones.
It's a good point.
Adweek's Best of the Decade awards list is out, and Apple cleaned up. Apple shows up with two nods for its ad campaigns, the Get a Mac ads and the iPod Silhouettes campaign. Steve Jobs was selected as Marketer of the Decade, Apple as Brand of the Decade, and the iPod for Product of the Decade. Adweek readers chose Steve Jobs as Media Executive of the Decade, where Adweek editors chose Rupert Murdoch. Readers chose iPhone apps as the marketing innovation of the decade. Adweek chose viral videos. And readers chose the iPhone, rather than the iPod, as product of the decade. Readers even chose the iPhone over Facebook as platform of the decade.
You know, I can't help but wonder if Adweek's editors didn't choose Rupert Murdoch because they just assumed that one day he'd be their boss.
A good assumption.
And with that little funny ha-ha, where would we be without SciStar to further entertain us? Since our last episode, the Pedraza brothers have felt the Lord God Almighty's hand smite them in the form of federal Judge William Alsup. The Honorable Judge Alsup granted Apple's request for a permanent injunction against the company that prevents it from selling its Mac clones, from selling or distributing software that allows people to install Mac OS X on non-Apple hardware, and from even helping anyone in doing that. In short, Apple won a complete and total victory against SciStar. Shortly after the injunction was issued, SciStar's website even went dark, but it resurfaced a couple of days later, sans computers. Its Rebel EFI software, which is what they use to get around Apple's blocks that prevent Mac OS X from being installed on was still being featured, though it was listed as being out of stock, at least as of this recording. SciStar also had conflicting statements from two attorneys, one of whom said they were throwing in the towel, while the other, the attorney that actually represented the company in its case against Apple, or in Apple's case against it, said, and I quote, "Nah."
Finally, Microsoft is doing its part to keep its Zune HD media player family-friendly. It's censoring the content in its new Twitter client app. The application displays all of your tweets in your timeline, but stars out words that Microsoft deems inappropriate. Censoring is not the only little-known feature of the Zune HD Twitter client. It also offers poor performance and fails to respond to button taps, and apparently the Zune HD has trouble keeping a Wi-Fi connection.
Ah, sign me up.
And now it's time for the Context Machine, where Brian and I delve a little more deeply into the news to give you some context into what's going on.
And it's funny because it's the Context Machine portion of the Context Machine. Yeah, we haven't figured that one out yet.
It is. Ricky, it's like the part of your car that's called the car.
The car. Yeah, well, at some point something brilliant is going to strike us for how to handle this, but for now we're just going with it.
Maybe we should just get to the end of that section and say, and now we will start the show. All of that you were listening to, that wasn't the show.
Don't tell anybody.
Here's the show.
Don't tell anybody.
Well, welcome.
You're letting our secret out. All right, so let's start with SciStar.
Yeah. Well, here's my question for you. Brian, does this mean that we stop listening and reading and writing stories about SciStar?
Are you on drugs?
Of
course not.
This is the cat that will not die.
This is, in fact, in many ways, the cat that won't die. I mean, you know, SciStar's goose is cooked, if we can throw in some additional metaphors there. The injunction that the judge handed down was, I mean, it truly was a total smackdown, because not only so, all right, there's certainly a lot involved in this case. For one thing, Rebel EFI was not named in the injunction. In other words, it's not SciStar is not prohibited from selling Rebel EFI. And what Rebel EFI does is it's the software that they use that basically, you know, tricks a PC into thinking it's a Mac, so that Mac OS X will install itself. And so the judge said very specifically, you guys kept me or did your best to keep me from knowing and understanding what Rebel EFI does and is, so I'm not going to include it in the injunction, nor am I going to exclude it, which is what SciStar had actually requested, that they've asked for an exemption to continue to sell the software. But what he did is he basically said, included in the injunction, his wording was chosen to include Rebel EFI no matter what it's called.
So essentially, it sounds like there was a strategic tactic in the courtroom on SciStar's part to say, Rebel EFI is this you know, magical thing that does some things that are critical to our company without really specifying what it does. So instead of saying you can't sell Rebel EFI, the judge said you can't sell software or you can't provide software that allows people to do this, that allows people to install Mac OS on a PC. And so he banned not Rebel EFI, but any software that does what Rebel EFI does.
Yes. He banned any kind of software that would allow people to circumvent Apple's copyright, and that would allow people to specifically install Mac OS X on Apple hardware.
Which might even be better than banning Rebel EFI, because
then all they have to do is change the name. Call it.
It doesn't say in your ruling. Yeah.
Exactly. He specifically said, and I'm not going to tolerate any antics from you. If you try to, you know, circumvent this, you will be in violation of this injunction. And I mean, it is unequivocal in what it is that they can't do. And what's interesting to me is that they seem to think that they're still going to be able to do it anyway.
So here's the other question that I have, which is, has anyone come up with a clear understanding of this company's motivation? Does anyone have an interpretation that makes sense in terms of rational human behavior? Why is this company pursuing this path?
You know, I don't know. There was a really weird 6-page, I think it was 6-page, might have been 8 pages, but it was a 6-page article about the Bedrosa brothers and the company that was published in a Miami newspaper. And the reporter did, frankly, did a terrible job. And you know, he didn't understand a lot of the technical issues, and rather than getting an explanation of it, just sort of presented everything from a very biased, pro SciStar kind of way. And anyway, that article certainly will give people at least a little bit of insight into SciStar's motivation, but I don't know that we can really still answer that question. And I mean, they seem to feel like Mac OS X needs to be liberated from Apple's control. I mean, it's just f-ing ridiculous. Did I say that? I did say that. Sorry, that beep you heard was me saying something I shouldn't have. They seem to think that they're entitled to be able to try to make a profit on what Apple's doing, and that, you know, Apple doesn't get to control Mac OS X, and it is so ridiculous. If the courts had ruled in SciStar's favor, what they would have been ruling is that there could be no proprietary hardware and software systems.
It is interesting in that sense. My takeaway from this over the past, has it been months, years,
it's been
lifetimes,
a couple of years now.
This is an area of law. I don't know how much specific law there is in this area. I can imagine that this hasn't been tested explicitly in the courts, but it's always been astonishing to me that anyone really wanted to go through the pain of forcing a judge to put this stuff down on paper, that companies have a right to do, or that they are allowed to do what Apple is doing, what every proprietary hardware software manufacturer does, selling licenses to their software to run on specific machines. But you get the sense, I have always wondered what rational person would stand themselves in front of a cannon and say, this is what I think you should do, while someone's lighting the fuse. It's always seemed odd to me.
It is bizarre. I mean, to me, the legalities involved, and while I have frequently and often played attorneys on TV, and I am not an attorney, but to me the legal issues here just seem very, 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 very cut and dry. Apple does have the legal right to protect its IP, and Apple does have the right to release software that's tied to its hardware.
And the good news is now a judge has agreed with you.
Yeah, exactly. Judges said this is absolutely the case. And that it's just so interesting to me that this company feels like they're somehow going to be able to continue to sell Rebel EFI when it expressly does what it is the judge says that they can't do. And the judge even said, by the way, while I don't know what Rebel EFI does, if it falls under the prohibitions of the injunction, you sell it at your peril. And it's like, whoa.
Yeah. Well,
that's
all right.
It's interesting.
So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we will see what happens. I'm guessing that they're going to manage to whimper along for a while and still get a little bit of news coverage for probably a few more months. We're probably not going to hear anything else on the case before, but certainly before the new year. Right now, there's some stuff going on between, because SciStar tried to move the case by suing Apple over Snow Leopard in Florida, trying to get out of the federal court that they were in the suit that's going on in California, which is the one that we've been talking about. And so there have been a couple of arguments going back and forth on that. And I honestly, personally expect, after talking to an attorney about it and, you know, what limited grasp I have of the legal issues, I think that will go nowhere, too. So, there you have it.
Yeah. So should we talk a little about Swipe?
Sure.
I got to tell you, Swipe, I don't feel that strongly about Swipe. I imagine some people are really excited about it. We should probably talk about it specifically for a second. We were talking before the show about Swipe and another product, Brian, that you were talking about that runs on the iPhone and the iPod Touch.
Called Tiki Notes.
And basically the game here is people are building these tools to enter text differently than the simple on-screen keyboard,
which is nothing other than people trying to take the existing paradigm of a keyboard, which makes a lot of sense for two hands, and moving that paradigm to a smaller device.
Yeah, and that makes sense to me. That's a very, we were talking about it, Tiki Notes. I looked at the interface and I said, well, that seems a little bit odd to me. And you said that you'd tried it a little bit.
Hello?
So you've tried Tiki Notes a little bit?
Oh, yeah, I get it now. See, now I see where you're going with that. So, right, so just pretend... Pretend that you just said tried it.
Okay.
And and I'll cut out everything until now.
So we were.
Yeah, I did try it, and quite frankly, I didn't get it. I'm sure that there are some people that will get it. Like for instance, another thing we're talking about is I'm too old for T9. T9 was just miserable for me.
Yeah, I can't do it either. And I was saying, like 2 years after I left college, I went back to visit some people, and you know, this is some years back. Everyone had a cell phone on campus where no one had before, and everyone was totally fluent in T9. It's lost on me, and I just barely missed it. That and Facebook. Anyway, I'm old.
The Facebook and their skateboards. These damn kids.
And their loud music.
That's right. Well, I actually am very interested in Swipe. Swipe actually seems to me to be something that I could get behind. Tiki Notes, and the reason why we mentioned Tiki Notes is that these are right now the two that I know of sort of competing methods of inputting text that are, you know, an attempt to be more than just taking the old keyboard paradigm and moving it to the phone.
And that's a really exciting concept to me. I think the reason that I'm excited to see activity around this, Swipe is actually what you're talking about is the reason I'm excited about, for example, Swipe. I think it's great to see people thinking creatively about interface in a way mm-hmm. that people haven't before. I think the other reason this is more broadly interesting, the context in which this is happening, is the iPhone versus Android competition that's developing. And again, mm-hmm. my real interest in this, I am delighted to see Android shaping up as a real competitor and a serious competitor to the iPhone. I know that, you know, the listeners might or might not agree with me on this. My experience has been, I've played with some of the Android phones a little bit. I know some folks that have them and love them. My experience has been, it's different. It does some things better. It does some things worse. At least where I live, Verizon's network is better. And, you know, it's got the hardware keyboard, which some people like. It does some things not as well. The big one, of course, is that there's no Google iTunes. There's no way that you can get your media onto an Android phone as efficiently as you can if you're using an iPhone with iTunes. But given those disparities in the experience, I am delighted to see that there is a real competitor in the smartphone category, the kind of consumer-oriented smartphone category. I think it's great to have someone, and particularly an open system, where people can be this creative, where ideas can get out there, whether it's in interface or application development or whatever else. I am so excited about this.
You know, it's funny you should say that, because I was totally on board with you. I was like I'm in the boat with you. We have adjoining seats in the boat. When we go to our dinners, we're seated next to each other on the boat. And like, I was just right there with you until you got to the part about the open system.
Uh-huh.
And I have nothing against open source systems. I think that there is a very, very definite place in the business world and in the world of technology in general for open source systems. So this is not me coming down on open source. But what I would like to see is a proprietary competition for Apple that offers the same kind of hardware-software integration that Apple offers. Because I personally think that, and I believe that Apple has been demonstrating this for you know, a very, very long time now, that when you have a proprietary system from a company that knows what it's doing, that you get a better user experience.
So I agree with that. I think we're actually, it turns out, I'm going to snuggle up to you again, Brian, right in that boat. I agree with you. The system, so believe it or not, dear listeners, I do not own a smartphone. I am a technology journalist and commentator that does not own a smartphone.
It's really, really weird.
Isn't that weird? How do you actually talk to people?
I don't even understand. Like when you, sorry.
I actually use string and two soup cans, and I just ask everyone in my family to walk around with the other end and keep it taut.
That's it. keep it taut.
It works very well. It's very my data plan is so cheap. I've clotheslined a lot of people, though. There will be a day when it comes time for me to purchase a smartphone. I suspect that I will be more enamored of Apple's solution or another proprietary solution if someone gets their act together to compete in that way. I think it's exciting to see an open solution, not because I think it's going to be the one that I'm going to like the most, and not because I think it's going to make the companies participating the most money. I think there's little doubt that Apple has found the most lucrative, the most elegant way to do this. Both those are two different things, and I think they're both remarkable that it is both the most elegant solution and it is incredibly lucrative. If you look, there's a plot somewhere that showed the revenue per year over the 2 years that the iPhone has been out and the amount of money that Apple makes. It's now $5 billion a year or something. I mean, it's insane how much money they make from a platform that didn't exist 3 years ago.
Right.
So I don't think that Android is going to be the most lucrative platform for anyone involved, Google or any of the phone manufacturers. I don't think it's going to be the most elegant solution. But I think it is extremely exciting that anyone can write apps, anyone can rewrite parts of the operating system, deploy them, see how they work. I think it's not going to be long before people start writing worms and other viruses that cause serious problems. But it's going to be a way to explore the kind of parameter space of smartphones much more rapidly than we would do if we just had successful proprietary systems.
Well, that is absolutely the case. Proprietary open or open licensing, which is what Microsoft does, competition period is great. And I want to see people nipping at Apple's heels all the time, always trying to keep, always pushing the company to be able to stay ahead to do what it is that they do, and I think that open or proprietary or open licensing, whichever other competing models you're talking about, I think that what is really going to kind of come down to in the smartphone market is going to be Android and iPhone.
Yeah.
At least for the next several years, and probably until we get to the next paradigm. Windows Mobile is all but dead, and I think it's going to I say that. What am I saying? BlackBerry is still going to be very strong. So it's probably going to be a triumvirate between BlackBerry, Apple, and Android. But I think that Android is going to increasingly take BlackBerry's market share as time goes on.
That makes sense to me. And I think, the other thing I think is shaping up is this this sense that by the way, I think the other thing that Google is going to do, one of the things I expect to happen in the next year, is I do expect Google to release whether it's a cloud-based thing or whether it's a client-based thing, a competitor to iTunes. There's now people are starting to wonder if the next version of iTunes is going to support putting your music on the cloud. Presumably, if Google released something, it would be cloud-based, but then they'd have a desktop client. They're going to end up being the same thing. And I think it would be – I think that Google will come up much closer behind Apple. The experience will improve dramatically if they can solve the syncing problem, which they currently – that's S-Y-N-C, not S-I-N-K. If they can solve the syncing problem of getting your media to your phone. Right now, they don't have a good solution for that. So assuming that solves itself, we get into a situation where Google essentially becomes kind of the open source Apple, which I think is pretty exciting.
God, though, is it, you know, is it really, can you really even say that the open source Apple? Because, you know, a big part of what makes that Apple experience is that control, you know. And so what do we have going on to the iPhone? We've got iPhone OS, which is really just stripped down Mac OS X. We've got the hardware that makes that go. We've got iTunes, which is where we actually manage the information on our iPhone. And then, of course, we have the App Store within the iTunes, which is where we buy the all the apps that we want to run on the iPhone. You've got all of those things together, you know, and of course, in addition to the intangible things like the fact that Apple makes interfaces that are great and fantastic and things like that. That actually is something I think that Google can do too. But you've got all these other things that Apple controls that all serve as this sort of unifying base to make the iPhone platform a fantastic experience. And Google doesn't have that, and I don't think Google can have that.
So that makes sense to me. The other thing, of course, what Google is not doing, their model is fundamentally different in the sense that they are not building their own phone. There's some discussion about whether or not they will, but they're not building their own hardware, which makes them sound a lot more like the open source Microsoft.
Yes. Yeah, with better taste.
With better taste.
With substantially better taste and better design aesthetics.
And less evil, according to their own philosophy, I suppose.
Yeah, I would personally agree with that. I think that. Do you see why we do the sound test? By the way, why I use that noise as my soundtrack. The thing is that you know, I think that Android is going to increasingly become a very, very capable platform. And I think that developers are going to certainly develop more phones for it. I think that there's a significant chance that Android is going to find a better foothold in the developing world than Apple's likely far more expensive iPhone will be able to find in the developing world. And, you know, I think that all these things are going to end up making for a large Android platform, but at the end, you're still going to have a lot of disparate companies peddling disparate products that just don't all work together. And even if, let's say Google was able to get some, one would think that they would actually take the Google desktop app and actually integrate it into that, because that is something that people already have. Because that's one of the things that Apple did is when they got people installing iTunes because of the iTunes Store, and they were able to leverage that into the control mechanism for the iPod and the iPhone. I mean, that's, you know, those are a couple of significant pieces of the puzzle that Apple put there. I'm not really saying this very well, but the Apple put into place that has made this experience thing possible. And Google doesn't have that. And even if they do that, they're still dealing with a bunch of hardware that they don't control.
Yeah, I think I can imagine one of the irritations with the Android platform going forward being, for example, that the plugs on the phones will all be different. So if you have a Droid phone, if you are used to your Droid phone, even if Google has the right kind of software, meaning that you can back up your one Droid phone that you bought from Motorola, buy a new phone from HTC and you plug it into the same Google software and it sucks everything down and your phone works the way it should, the plugs might all be different, which means that all your accessories won't work anymore. So I can imagine there being frustrations like that in working with that platform. But
yeah, plus, you know, some phones are going to have this feature and some phones are going to have that feature and some phones are going to have, you know, this capability and versus that capability with this screen size versus that screen size. There's a lot of disparateness going on.
Yeah. So one thing is for sure. I think that this coming year will be very interesting in this market. I think that it's going to look substantially different. Right now, we have this sense that iPhone is king of the world, and there's a bunch of other people kind of piling around, confused. I think by this time next year, those battle lines will be much clearer. I think there are going to be clear advantages to each platform over the other. I think the big one for Android is going to be openness, that the App Store is going to take anything that you want to write for it, that they're going to you're going to have choices with hardware, keyboards. And the big one for Apple is going to be the usual, that it just works. Everything plugs into everything else, and it just works. But I think right. I think there's going to be a lot that happens in this next year, I think. And I think we'll see that. I think we'll see the situation tighten up a lot in the next 12 months.
I think we will. And I think that we're going to see Microsoft become a, you know, has been in this market, you know, a bit player at the most. I think that we're going to see Palm increasingly getting squeezed out as well, which, by the way, they do at least have their own proprietary system, but that's another issue. They didn't really seem to be able to execute it very well. But and so I think we're going to be seeing a three-horse race between Google and BlackBerry, the Research in Motion, and Apple's iPhone.
Yeah, I think it will be interesting to see. We haven't talked at all about Palm. It will be interesting to see what they do. There are a couple different ways that they could attack this problem. One of them, presumably they'll improve the hardware on their phone, it will be interesting to see if they try and address the software side, if they try and build essentially their own iTunes as well. Because I think, you know, Rubenstein, at the head of that company, former Apple executive, understands how powerful iTunes is. He understood it well enough to use iTunes as the method of syncing media to the Palm Pre. So presumably they understand that the situation they have now is not tenable, and they're going to try and do something to fix it. The execution is key. If they don't nail it the first time, no one's going to take them seriously after that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's going to be the case. Palm's work is cut out for him, to say the least.
I agree.
And I don't really see them as having much of a chance, which is, you know, interesting to me, because there are so many ex-Apple people that are at that company. I actually had higher expectations for Pre before it actually came out. And I don't know. I don't think they're going to go very far with that device. And again, we're going to come down to the Android platform, the BlackBerry platform, and the iPhone platform.
We shall see.
We shall see. And what else we shall see is our sponsor for this week, which is Smile on My Mac.
Yeah, great company.
Great company. You like my segue there?
That was beautiful.
It wasn't really all that beautiful. I've had better. But, you know, it's December 22nd, and if you are doing last-minute gifts for the holidays, and I guess Ricky, your holiday season is over. How does that work, by the way?
You're saying for Hanukkah?
Hanukkah's done, but Christmas is coming, and I know that your wife is celebrating Christmas, so that's got to be fun in the household.
That's right. Well, we do a little bit of both. It's actually very convenient from the life perspective.
You got like a whole month.
That's true. It's a whole month of celebration. December is the happiest month
in the Spiro household. That's fantastic.
That's right. Well, no, it works out great, because of course the big debate is always, whose family do you go to for Christmas? Well,
of course, yes.
With our family, we go to my wife's family for Christmas, and my family got Thanksgiving.
Wow. Excellent.
Yeah, it all works out,
and no one gets their nose bent out of shape.
That's right. Ever.
All right. So, ever. That's great. All right. So, on that note, so it's the 22nd of December, and Christmas is coming up. And if you're doing some last minute gifts, one thing you may want to think about doing is like a DVD or CD of memories, for like especially for grandparents, because grandparents love that sort of thing.
They
and that's they where Smile on My Mac comes in.
Yeah.
They do eat that up. because the product that we're talking about this week is Disk Label, which is software that allows you to easily design covers for CDs, and then even if you have a printer that'll do it, to print the label directly on your CDs and DVDs to really personalize whatever it is that you're making on a DVD or CD.
And you know, it's important that what you're talking about, what grandparents like, what they like even more than what's on the CD is the packaging. I'm actually quite serious about that. I'm sure that if the day comes when I, you know, when I have grandkids, the first thing I'm going to do, I'm going to open up a present and say, oh, this looks so beautiful. It's true. I don't know if you've ever had that experience of giving gifts to grandparents, Brian, where they
well, you know, there, do that. I've never once actually given a present to anyone. I'm just kidding. no, but perceived value in presentation, you know, it does matter. And when someone gets like a, you know, like CT that's got a Sharpie on it that says Junior's first baseball game, right,
they think, why did you how long did you spend on this, really?
Yeah, you know, and there's no perceived value in that. But if you get something that's got you know, a personalized and professional looking cover, I'm
always impressed.
Yeah, and you know, of course, there's business things to do with this label as well. If you know, if you've got to make a short run of CDs, you can just do it yourself rather than having them printed up. There's a lot of things that you can do with this label, and it's fantastic software. They're a great company, and they have been longtime sponsors of this podcast and many podcasts. Actually, they've been big boosters of podcasts in general.
Yeah, and they've been around. Smile on My Mac has been around for a while. It's always been a great company to work with.
And they're offering you, our listeners, a discount for Disk Label. 20% off.
Cool.
So it's normally $35.95. Right now you can get it for $28.76. And you can only get it if you go to smileonmymac.com/AWR, because we used to be called the Apple Weekly Report. it's a legacy URL, but it's there, and you'll see the information about this label itself, as well as the link to get the discount on it. And we heartily encourage you to do so. Don't we, Ricky?
We do. I do.
All right, so Smile on My Mac. This week's sponsors, check them out. The link is in the show notes, or you can go to smileonmymac.com/AWR and definitely take advantage of that discount. And we have one more thing that we were going to talk about in the context machine of the context machine.
Yeah. We were talking about this before the show. We didn't really have an excuse. Usually, you know, you want to have the story at the beginning that gives you an excuse to talk about the subject. I forget that. I wanted.
Well, you know what? You're guest hosting, so we're going to do what you want.
So we're going to do what I want to do. Dang it!
Damn it!
Here's the thing. If you've been paying attention for the last couple of months, you've seen Apple's stock price go from what, 70 to about 200. You may have noticed a lot of revised price targets on Apple's stock. And you've noticed, I assume, a lot of analyst commentary about all the extraordinary things that Apple will be doing in the next year. And a lot of this centers around, a lot of the analyst commentary about Apple centers around the tablet that they are supposedly going to release.
Well, I got to interrupt, because a lot of what's been going on with the stock price has a lot to do with the iPhone and a lot to do with the fact that they're selling record numbers of Macs.
So both of those things are true, and of course they've had great success when everything else tanked. So there was good reason to believe. There's good reason for the stock price to fall, of course, last year when everyone thought that everyone was going to stop buying anything. It's reasonable to assume that people are going to stop buying Macs and iPods and iPhones.
Yeah, because today's stock price is basically back where it was before the current economic slowdown.
Yeah, and also Start. Accounting for the growth in the iPhone and as a platform, as a product and as a platform.
Yeah.
So I don't have a problem with the price of the stock itself. But it's been fascinating to me to watch. So I don't want to argue that the discussion about a tablet for next year is what was driving the stock price over the past.
It's definitely been a driver. I just wanted to clarify that it hasn't been the driver.
Right. So this sequence of events has reminded me of something. I don't know. Do you ever watch The Daily Show?
Every episode.
So I don't know if you recall or if our listeners have seen. It was probably around this time last year. Jon Stewart had an interview. Actually, it looks like it was last spring. Had an interview with Jim Cramer of CNBC. You remember this?
Mm-hmm.
So for those of you that might not have seen it, Jim Cramer is the host of Mad Money on CNBC. He's a very well-respected stock analyst. He has a very loud and entertaining show on CNBC. And he made
a lot of people in the Apple finance board are not fans of his, by the way.
Yeah, so, and I can imagine, I mean, he's loud, so he's, I know that there are a lot of people that feel strongly about him one way or another. He made a couple of really bad calls and also became kind of the face of CNBC as The Daily Show was trashing a lot of their coverage. So he comes on The Daily Show, and in the process of researching for it, Jon Stewart and his team at The Daily Show uncovered some footage from a couple years earlier. So this is, I think, in 2006, before the iPhone had been released. And played a bunch of quotes of Jim Cramer talking about stock trading and managing hedge funds and so on, talking about essentially the inappropriate or corrupt things that people were doing in those positions. And you get the sense that he was doing when he was in that position. There was one comment that stood out, I think, and is particularly relevant for us to remember as we listen to analysts talking right now about Apple. And I pulled up the transcript of this thing. Let me just read you this. So Jim Cramer says, this is back in 2006, I think, before the iPhone had been announced. He says, Apple is very important to spread the rumor that both Verizon and AT&T have decided that they don't like the iPhone. That's a very easy one to do. You also want to spread the rumor that it is not going to be ready for Macworld. And this is very easy because the people who write about Apple, that would be us, want that story. And you can claim that it is credible because you spoke to someone at Apple, because Apple doesn't comment. So this was his commentary about how easy it is, in effect. By the way, this is right before that he had said, you can't foment. You can't create, this is again him talking, you can't create yourself an impression that a stock's down, but you do it anyway because the SEC doesn't understand it. So what he was saying is it's really easy to manipulate Apple's stock price based on rumors because the company doesn't comment and because people are engaged. There's a community around it that includes the Mac Observer, the rest of the Mac web, all of your readers, all of our readers and listeners, that helps drive activity of the stock. So it's an easy stock to manipulate. This is what occurs to me when I see analysts talking about what the tablet will be, what it's going to look like, when it's going to come out, when clearly, in retrospect, they don't have information that the rest of us don't have.
But wait, because I was with you. I was back in that boat. Matter of fact, we had connected life preservers.
Uh-huh.
How would that even work? Anyway, be that as it may, there is a lot of information right now that is coming from sources that are outside of Apple's control. So some of that information is coming from the usual sieve that is the Taiwan OEM industry.
Yep.
And some of that information is coming from people that Apple is approaching, pitching this device ahead of its launch because they want to be able to launch with that device. In the same way that they pitched the record labels iTunes before the iTunes Store was launched. Of course, they had to have partners to be able to announce the damn thing.
And there were leaks about the iTunes Store before it was announced.
And there were, right. And so, you know, in this case, we have publishers that are talking because Apple is going to these publishers and saying that we want to basically have this device be a premium platform for digitally distributing printed work. So, I mean, there is information that a lot of these analysts have, and while, yes, a lot of them are and sometimes making stuff up out of whole cloth, a lot of them are maybe attributing or giving too much credibility to some stories that are out there, maybe some stories that are coming from within the Mac web, but some of these analysts also have contacts and feet on the ground and boots on the ground, as it were, in Taiwan. And there are publishers that are talking about what Apple has approached them with.
So you
can't say that they have no information.
That's right. And some of them may have information that is not public. Here's my concern. If they have information that is public, then they are as uncertain about that information as we are. Right? There are leaks. You always have to question the validity of a leak. You have to question whether or not Apple deliberately planted leaks. They are known to actually mislead their partners about what their pipeline is. So you have to question the validity of the leaks if they're leaks. And if they're not leaks, and these people do have specific information that no one else does, the first thing you have to know is that they've already made their own trades based on that information before they tell you about it.
Of course.
And that very possibly that information is considered insider information and therefore not legal to trade on. So here's what I think the rule should be. I think that analysts should be required by the SEC to specify where their information comes from. And if they don't do it up front in the same way that when you, for example, look at the financial disclosures from a company at the end of a quarter, they have to have certain qualifiers about forward-looking statements and so on, that analysts should be required to say, here's who I talked to, these are the specific individuals who gave me this information.
Well, then no one would say anything.
Of course not. But it would make it much harder to manipulate the stock price.
True, and they would find some other ways of doing this sort of thing.
It does not. What I'm suggesting does not address the issues of insider trading, right? People are still going to have people with boots on the ground. They're still going to be trying to get whatever information they can and make trades based on that.
But that's not insider trading. Insider trading is when an executive at a company is doing some kind of buy or sell based on knowledge that only he or she has access to, or someone that knows that person.
Right. Exactly. So,
when you're getting an engineer at an OEM that you know is talking to a Taiwanese newspaper, and then you find out about that, then I don't think that would be
so. Leaks are a different issue, and it's there's an interesting division between journalists and analysts, right? Journalists have some latitude. In our society, we give journalists some latitude to protect their sources because you want people to be able to instill confidence that if they talk to a journalist, they won't be found out. And that's it.
With, of course, the caveat that there's a difference between between, you know, protecting sources of important leaks and protecting sources of, you know, product information that a company doesn't want.
Exactly. So I think there's a fundamental question about whether source protection is something that we want to do in business reporting, whether or not that's the right policy. But there's also an issue about whether or not analysts should have the same kind of rights as journalists do. Analysts are out there trying to help people make money or make money themselves.
They don't. There are specific regulations governing what analysts are, you know, allowed to talk about and do. But keep in mind that, you know, we're kind of talking about the exception to the rule here. Kramer was talking about how easy it is to manipulate Apple's stock price. But I don't think the same thing could be said about Microsoft. You know, there isn't a big community of Microsoft sites, for instance, that are talking about Microsoft in the same way that the Mac web talks about Apple.
But I think it is reasonable to say that the way Apple is running its business is a fair way for a company to run its business. And a company should be allowed to run its business in this fashion without creating a situation where it's easy to manipulate its stock price.
Yeah. You know, this is kind of one of those things where, you know, I used to get a little bit tense with Apple about getting tense with rumors, in that the desire for the rumors is part and parcel with the excitement that Apple had about its products, about the excitement that Apple is able to garner and generate about its products. You can't have people looking forward to what Apple's doing without also having people trying to figure it out ahead of time.
Yeah. Well, I don't have a problem with the rumors. I have a problem.
But this is tied to this, though. I mean, you've got Apple. In this case, Apple's stock may be easy to manipulate, but that's kind of a byproduct of, again, that sort of secrecy that they develop and the fact that they've got this culture of people that actually give a crap about what the company's doing.
Yeah. Well, I understand that. I think that the issue that I'm concerned about is whether analysts can take advantage of those rumors to manipulate the stock price. So there's the rumors. There are going to be rumors. There are going to be leaks. But if analysts were required to say, they're going to release this product in this time frame, and I'm saying that because I read this article in the Taiwan News, that gives their comments a context that makes it less likely. Right now, there's an additive effect. If there's a leak in a Taiwan paper and there's a subsequent comment from an analyst that says, I have contacts in this place and they talked to so-and-so and this is what they heard, those two things add to one another. If there was one leak and the analysts are required to say, my source was this leak, this report that came out earlier, it should not add in the same way to the perception of validity of the story. I think that would be helpful. Anyway, that's...
I will fight and die for your right to think so.
Well, that's probably a good place for us to wrap up then.
Fair enough. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to acm@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to steveliness. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. Thank you for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. Feel free to follow me at twitter.com/TMOBrian. And we'd like to thank, of course, our sponsors at Smile on My Mac.
Thanks, Smile on My Mac. Our content is written by the fine folks at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom. You're welcome.
Thanks,
That's all for this week.
Stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
dear. The falling rain is creeping near. We're trapped by lies that we don't know. I can see a way out now. I will not go, no matter how. You push me under, you hold me down. After all, I think I'd rather. I can see a way out now. I will not go, no matter how. Push me under, you hold me down. After all, I think I'd rather drown. I'd rather.